This is You've Been Challenged. I'm Craig Collins.
And I'm Rachel Woodall.
This week, I am very excited, as I say every time I start the podcast, for the guest we have in studio. Scott Stantis is here, and the show you picked is one of my favorites of shows that got canceled that should not have. This is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I seem to be the guy who falls in love with all of the shows that get canceled. That's my, because I love Pushing Up Daisies, fell in love with Firefly, and now we're talking about Better Off Ted.
Firefly is an amazing show. We can come back to that some other time. Better Off Ted is so funny. There's so many shows like it that try to be quirky and kind of nuanced in the way that they present humor, but they seem to try too hard. There's a show on TV right now that I know Rachel is watching,
The Good Place,
which is going for the same sense of humor that Better Off Ted pulls off so well, but it's obvious they're trying to do it. For some reason, the way that this show is set up, the commercials that you see for the company that Ted works for,
Viridian Dynamics,
everything about it, it's so funny and so wonderfully sarcastic. That is the best part.
And I think it's pitch perfect. The commercials, as you mentioned, of Viridian Dynamics, food. Yum. It's just one of them.
It's funny because the company is unapologetic about trying to sell you anything and everything, and the commercials demonstrate that all the time. And I wish I could play them if this computer was working, but maybe I'll add some to the end.
You can insert them. You have the technology for that. Yeah, it's and the best part of the show is Portia de Rossi, who plays Veronica Palmer, who is the boss. She's head of this department. It's just, and
she's just the best part of any show she's on, just to be clear.
She is particularly good here. I mean, you're right. But here she just is so strong. The character is so dead on. Right out of the chute, you understand all the characters immediately. Ted is played by Jay Harrington, who's a far too handsome man.
Yes. I can say it this time.
Yes. And he's head of product development, part of this massive corporation.
Go ahead. We'll give a little background.
Before we go any farther, I have a contest for the two of you, because you guys have both seen the entire series.
Correct. Yes.
Full disclosure, I binged the first season.
Okay. Well,
I got caught up in other stuff. First season.
You must finish what you begin.
I will finish it.
Is this what's wrong with kids today?
I wish I was still a kid. I would like to hear each of you summarize the show in one sentence, and then I'm going to pick who wins.
Oh, God. Scott, I'm going to let you go first because you're really good at encapsulating things.
The quirky world of a mega corporation with lovable, well-defined characters.
I like that a lot. I don't even know if I can. It's a show about a group of people that work for an unapologetically evil company, and it's hilarious. That's two sentences.
No, that was a comma.
Okay. Hilarious.
It really is. Did you like it, Rachel?
I liked it.
Well, and you love Portia de Rossi.
I was texting Craig, and the second I started watching the show, I was like, Portia's on this? Okay, sold.
She is. And her character is just great because she's totally sold into the corporate, the corporate mindset. And occasionally shows a heart, but mostly not so much. The show begins, the entire thing begins with her suggesting that they freeze one of the scientists on the product development team.
Phil and Lem are the two scientists, and they're great.
It's such a good introduction to the show because I didn't read anything about it. Craig said, we're watching this, and I was like, I needed something to watch tonight. Clicked play, and having that be the first thing that was such a cool way to be thrown into the world, because I was kind of trying to figure out, I was like, okay, this is all right, they're bad. Wait, what? They're freezing someone, and then when he accidentally gets unfrozen, he has like weird PTSD scream. It was a very, very good way to start the series.
No, it's incredible.
And those two characters, Phil and Lem, are scientists in the lab, and they are really good friends.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
They're adorable. Cool. Oh, my gosh. The whole cast, like I said, the whole cast is tremendous. I was just re-watching many of them, and I mean, things like Linda, who is the development person. She works under Ted. They kind of have a thing, you know, some romantic tension. But she's talking to Veronica, saying that how much they hate going to the lab. She says, "Yeah, last time I was down there, you know, I was chased by this 8-legged freak." She goes, "Ah." The Portia goes, "Ah, the Octo Chicken. We had such high hopes for that."
Exactly. It's stuff like that too, and that's what makes her so strong in that character, is that her constant commitment to the company, even when you can see in her face. I think she does such a great job of portraying saying physically, not agreeing with what she's saying verbally, but still saying it in some of the episodes, which to me is an amazing kind of joke about a boss that you might have at a company that really, really drinks the Kool-Aid.
And the title character, Ted, is a single dad and raising a precocious young girl who she is, who I think is also really good in that role.
Oh, my God, Rose.
She is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She really is tremendous.
Rose and Veronica have an incredible relationship.
Yes.
That develops almost immediately when you first see Rose. She connects to Veronica, which Ted finds very disturbing. Because Ted's such a warm-hearted, kind of nice, honest guy that probably shouldn't be working for a big giant company like the one he's working for. He should be somewhere else doing some sort of nonprofit work, but he finds himself where he is, and his boss is the cold-hearted sort
of. Yeah, but he doesn't fight it too much. He cashes the checks.
He does.
That was my thing, was after I started watching, then I did go to read a synopsis of like what the show was supposed to be about, and it was talking about how Ted is this super moral man.
He is.
All these things. I mean, he doesn't fight that hard when they try to freeze his friend.
He brings...
When they try to weaponize a pumpkin.
Right.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But he questions at the company, no one else... And actually, it's funny because in the show, at one point, they tell you that your employee contract, you agree to everything. You give up all of your intellectual property. You give up your DNA to Viridian Dynamics when you get a job there. And so there's no way to like fight. But Ted constantly at least brings the issue to light.
I think
and
that...
Then he ignores it.
What is the woman, Linda?
Linda.
I think she is more moral than Ted.
Well, in fact, not to give you a spoiler for the second season, he literally says she's our moral compass.
Yeah, she's a good person. I don't think Ted is really that great because he can kind of see what's wrong, but he doesn't.
In contrast to Portia de Rossi's character.
Well,
though,
okay, yeah, but in contrast to Portia's character, pretty much anyone.
Well, she had, again, I quote her all the time.
You should.
Because of corporations, seeing as, you know, we all work for one or another. When she says, "Oh, that's maybe the reason that this year we won't win the most moral company in America." Oh, wait, they don't have that award.
No, it's so funny, and the commercials too that are just interspersed throughout.
Oh, yeah, they're interstitial.
And, oh my God!
Uh-huh. And they look like big corporation because they have all the B-roll of the pretty scenes, or and they just say, you know, life's, you know, competition's great if it's between these two badgers and they're just like digging away at this corpse or this. And then they shoot have the stock shot of this senior citizen, an older woman holding a baby, and says, "Or this old woman and baby fighting to the death. Competition is good.
Competition is wonderful."
So, throughout every episode, there's kind of a new
thing.
It is
really funny. It is. Sorry, go ahead, Rachel.
There's a generally like a new invention, a new thing that they're trying to innovate. What would you two pick as like each of your favorite things?
Like, see, you know, what I really like about having
pumpkins.
Rachel on the podcast is she tries to give me a path, and this
is
that path.
I'm making a beautiful path for the both of you.
I'd say one of the things was the callous beef they were trying to grow.
Oh, yeah.
And they tried singing to it. They tried being
doing that
nice
in real
to
life
it.
Now. That's a real thing that they're
I know.
Trying to.
That's what's
make,
weird about this
strange.
Show.
Weaponizing a pumpkin, which you mentioned briefly, was really, really funny. That is really funny. A lot of the inventions. Every time that you go down to the two scientists and they're discussing what they're making, it seems ridiculous. And hilarious. It's hard to pick.
What about season two things? Because you guys are both saying stuff I've seen.
Well, we're trying to keep you in the loop.
It is
kind of hard to categorize what season something happened in, too.
Something from the later end.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. You saw the jetpack.
Yeah, the jetpack. Mm.
Or what about this? What is one of their inventions that you would actually buy?
All of them. They're all pretty.
You would buy a weaponized pumpkin?
Heck yeah.
Who is in the studio?
The neighborhood dog just really ticks me off and never stops barking.
I feel like you could throw a regular pumpkin at a dog, and if it's small enough, it would get hurt.
Let's talk about specific episodes then that I really like. I like when Veronica sends Rose to daycare and tries to spy on, and this I think is in season two, it's not an invention, tries to spy on the other employees she has by having Rose, that's the daughter of Ted, talk to the other workers' children. So this one child is going in every day with a specific mission, a specific way to communicate, to give information back to Ted's boss. It is hilarious, the way in which that whole episode goes and how committed Rose is to helping Veronica is really, really funny. Because Rose is, again, in my opinion, like Ted, a person that is moral, and maybe chooses not to be from time to time, but their gut tells them to be moral.
Well, Rose is like Ted's moral compass.
in a way, I guess. I mean, Linda is too.
And his daughter.
I think Ted is a moral person. I think we can discuss that for a second in the podcast.
Okay.
I know that
let's discuss morality.
I know that. Yeah, let's go ahead. I know that he doesn't follow his morality, but he continues to, unlike Portia de Rossi, object to things, at least mentally.
At least once, but
verbally.
Then he still does them.
Yeah, but it's tough because
so
if you work at a big company and you're cashing big checks, you may be tempted to stay, but you could still be a moral person in that atmosphere by at least having the conversation, right?
So are you a moral person if you just know what is moral and what isn't, but then
no.
Your actions show something different?
But it's not
come
his
on,
actions.
Let's get into
no,
a morality
no,
chat.
Scott, I really want your
sub-podcast.
Opinion on this, too. He works at a big company. He's not making the decisions the company's making. He is telling the company not to make a decision. Then they make it anyway. He's sort
and
of
then he kind of supports them.
He's
and
morally
helps them
in the clear though,
anyway.
Because he's not the one making the decision. He's just saying we shouldn't do this, and then they do it. And then he says, "Okay, fine, your decision. I still work here." I would say he's still moral.
He knows what's moral.
He knows what's
His
moral.
Actions are not moral.
Well, he does, but he has to ask. He has to talk it over with Linda to kind of determine the moral, the
That's
morality
true.
Or immorality of an issue. But he still freezes an employee. He still weaponizes pumpkins.
See, my argument is he does not do that. The company he works for does that, and he raises an objection.
He talks the guy into being frozen
after he's asked to do it. After he's asked to talk him into doing it.
So if you asked me. Let me try to think of something to say where I'm not actually making any real
second season,
to anyone.
No, second season, an employee drops dead in his office.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to push everyone to go to Relaxicon because they have a sleep-inducing machine. So everyone's working like 20 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
What's the name of the character that dies? It's not, for Joe or whatever. For Joe! And he actually officiates over the funeral. Nobody knew this guy, and the few who knew him didn't like him.
Right.
So it's not a loss to anyone on the show. But Ted still participates in this charade, and
I mean, I guess
so.
That
you're saying by speaking at the funeral,
he was just following orders. Yes, it's a metaphor for Nazi Germany.
Maybe there was also some level of compassion there because no one else wanted to give a speech, and he felt obligated to go ahead and speak so that someone spoke.
No, he just officiated over it. He had Len call, who actually the only experience they had with each other is Len had actually spilled hot coffee on this guy, and his whole eulogy was. He did not like having hot, wet things spilled on him.
Well, so I'm not trying to say that he's a bad person.
No, I know.
I just think
he's too handsome to be bad.
You keep saying everything I'm thinking. I think he's just kind of like a regular person. So he's like you or I. Like, if we knew WGN was freezing people, we'd probably still be doing our podcast.
That depends on who.
Yeah, it really depends
on
who.
Well, that's true. But
we have a list.
Yeah, I can think of. Okay. But
for all different reasons.
But I think sometimes on a TV show, you kind of want that absolute example. Like, if they're going to say it's about this moral guy, I want him to be more than realistically moral to kind of show that.
But I think that's what's so charming about the show, and what's so funny
true.
About the show is that it's not, I mean, and the Linda character is over the top in her morality. I think that at times she is too moral in some of the things she objects to.
No,
are
she
probably,
steals
no,
yeah, she
towels.
Steals. She steals paper
creamer.
Towels and creamer.
She does. That's true. But at times
that's like
when
my
she
kind
objects,
of rebellion.
Yeah, right. At times when she objects to some things, I think that they're probably more gray area stuff than other things that they talk about in the show. There are times when Ted seems very frustrated by Linda's morality because it's so exaggerated, like you're saying.
But he also concedes that oftentimes she's right.
Yeah.
So you asked about an invention, the translator that they were in the second season. There's a beautiful CEO, of course, from Germany, and they can use the translator device, and then initially the device has the voice of a 10-foot killer robot. and so
Very
Ted says
interesting. Okay.
So Ted says, change this, and they change it to Phil's voice.
Aww.
So she's going, she says, take me now, kiss me, Ted, kiss me hard on the lips, and it's Phil's voice.
Oh, it's real funny.
It's hard to explain, but
let's talk about some of the other relationships in the show. Ted and Veronica have some sexual tension.
They had, they actually had sex.
Right.
On a desk. Well,
But in the end, they still are coworkers that had a...
And they actually show what's incredible to me about the whole balance of this show is how all the characters, this could be a very cold, mean show.
Yeah.
In fact, they all have great affection for each other. They really do. And that's written into it. That's the acting that's involved, and it makes it really watchable because these characters, even as heinous as Veronica's character is, you still have some affection for her.
Oh, for sure.
You know who Veronica reminds me of?
Go ahead.
Dwight from The Office, because she's
that's an interesting comparison.
It's in certain ways, like he's so like by the book,
company.
In love with the company, like will do anything the company tells him to. I feel in a very stern way, but you still have those moments where you can see the compassion or you can see the lovability.
Well, that's true. As The Office progresses, have you seen The Office?
Not much of it. I've only watched a few episodes.
As The Office progresses, Dwight becomes more of a likable character, which I think is very similar to Portia de Rossi's character. At the beginning of the first season, I think she appears to be someone that you probably won't like. But as the seasons progress, as we get to know her more, as she sort of cracks and gets to know Ted's daughter, she seems to be a more you know, human character. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I think she starts off human. I really do think this is one of those rare shows that most of the characters come out pretty fully formed
pretty
from the very beginning. And they stay on that course. That's why I think it's such an effective show. You know what happened to it?
It got canceled after
two
seasons.
Yeah, how did it get
You know why?
No one was watching it.
Well, that yes, that's part of it. Here's the thing. I don't know if you remember this little episode. Scrubs was running out of its run on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
ABC picked it up.
Yeah, I know.
And if you remember, what?
That's cool.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, nice.
Because if you remember the ABC version of the show, Scrubs, it was horrid. It was not funny. It was clearly running on vapors. The writing was terrible. It just was.
The writing was awful. The characters, the girl who's on Halt and Catch Fire now.
Joe,
she really was as charming, I think, as JD, just not given the material to be awesome. But sorry, you were talking about
right. And so anyway, so they put Better Off Ted after it, assuming, God, we've got this. And I imagine the producers and the actors on Better Off Ted thought, this is awesome. We're behind Scrubs, you know, which at the time was a top five show in America. And it just, because the shows, it was so bad, it failed. It was a horrible, horrible show.
It never had good ratings. The first season, critics loved the show, but I think...
Better Off Ted?
Yeah, Better Off Ted. But I think only 4 or 5 million people, which apparently at the time was a big deal, watched the show. And then as it progressed, it only had less viewers. Even though critics continued to love the show, everyone said how funny the show was. But it's a lot like Arrested Development, which Portia de Rossi was also on. Critics loved it, and for some reason, people didn't watch.
I think Arrested Development's a much more challenging show.
Why
than
is that?
Better I think the relationship between the characters, they're much quirkier. The storyline is a lot more quirky than
I think their commitment,
working at
though,
an office.
I think their commitment, though, to sarcasm, which is what I take both, like, it's a very sarcastic sense of humor, is it's so straight-faced that it's amazing, and that's what both shows do very, very well. I think Arrested Development, when the ridiculous is happening, the characters do such a good job of not at all acknowledging that something outside of the main character, Michael, in that show, who is, again, sort of the Ted character, sort of the... Because Ted breaks
and
the...
And also a babe.
Ted breaks the fourth wall a lot, and that's something that I think is really intriguing about this show, is that he'll continue to speak to the audience, because in a lot of ways, he represents our observations. That's why he has to be somewhat moral, because when something is objectionable, he voices what we're probably saying.
Right. He's the guy. And so...
And I think that dynamic, I think that that's what makes these shows and that sense of humor, that quirky sense of humor, actually work and be so effective. It seems when the writing is aware they're being quirky, or at least demonstrating that awareness, like in The Good Place, it comes off as not as funny.
Oh,
how much Arrested Development did you see?
Not a lot. Okay. My kids adored it.
Okay, I would tell you to get into like the second season. Like, just go ahead and jump in and really try to watch it, because by the third season, that show is as strong as any show.
Yeah,
and
but the fourth season is really bad. Don't watch it.
The one on Netflix?
Yeah.
Well,
the reboot season is horrible.
Really?
Because Netflix should pick up Better Off Ted. They should try this.
That would be my question
thing.
Is if Better Off Ted was airing now, uh-huh, when we have Hulu and every show puts their show online, which I know they did when it was on, but it wasn't as popular. Do you think it would still be on? Because people don't really, like, it doesn't really matter as much who's watching it live, because they've got to add on streaming by now.
Well, that's an interesting question. I would ask both of you, how many shows do you watch that are put out by a streaming service?
Well,
I don't even...
A bunch. You watch a bunch of television.
It's all, pretty much all I watch.
Right. But I mean, no, I don't mean that you watch it on a streaming service. I mean you watch something like Netflix's original series.
Yeah, that's so... I don't watch...
Yeah. See, I think...
Terrestrial...
You don't
know. No offense, WGN, but I really just don't...
No, it's totally fine. You know what's interesting about that, then, is something like Better Off Ted, I think, would really succeed in that world because it's a lot like The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. There's another... silly sense of humor. Have you seen that show at all?
I watched the, I thought the first season, I thought the first half was very good. The second half really started to come apart for me.
I agree.
The second season, I think, specifically, actually, maybe came apart even a little bit more.
Oh, really? Yeah, I kind of figured it
the
would.
The second season starts.
Well, here's the thing. What I thought, when I heard it was Tina Fey, my thinking was, okay, so this is going to be her chance. It's cable. You can say the F word. You can have, you can do anything you want with it now. So now she can take some chances. This is, for those of you unfamiliar, real quick, stories about she's part of a cult that got buried in a bunker for years and we're told that the world had, in fact, the nuclear apocalypse had happened and then they are saved and they come out and it turns out they had not. They had been held by a charismatic, what appears to be a religious figure.
John Hamm again.
And I thought, here's an opportunity. They were traumatized because they imply once that they were sexually abused by this guy.
That's true.
I thought, what a great opportunity to darken the humor, which elevates it in many ways. And they didn't do it.
I think you're right. I think that it could have challenged us more and made us think a lot more than it did. But Kimmy Schmidt is still a really funny show. And I think to go back to sort of how it connects to Better Off Ted, it's a very quirky show. It's very sarcastic in its humor. There's a lot of moments in Kimmy Schmidt.
They don't break the fourth wall, though.
No, they don't break the fourth wall. But there's a lot of moments in Kimmy Schmidt where they say something ridiculous, especially the lead character, and no one really acknowledges the ridiculousness of it, which is why that is so funny. When she references the bunker, people usually just ignore what she's saying. And those things are insane.
That's just, that's a show, and I think Better Off Ted is the same way that I don't think I would sit down to watch once a week.
No?
It's not enough. I think that the reason Kimmy Schmidt, even, the only reason I watched it is because it's on Netflix, you can watch a couple. I don't think it has enough to carry. I don't know that I would watch Better Off Ted once a week.
I don't think it's made to stand alone. I think Better Off Ted was.
Right, but Better Off Ted seems like a good show to binge.
Oh.
I'm saying I don't know.
No, you're right. And I think I think as a binge show, it works great. Absolutely works great.
Because they're short.
I don't think that was intentional on the creator's part, obviously, because when they created it.
So we did a show on this podcast a few weeks ago, which I'm not sure if you've seen, Scott, Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we watched the first season. The only season.
Oh, yeah. When I watched that show and when Rachel watched that show, we both got bored around the fourth or fifth episode because I think these products are now being put out as a set. I think some of the writing, some of the way in which you're doing it, you know that the audience is going to watch maybe all of it in one sitting or two sittings or three sittings. So you stretch things out a little bit more than you should, or you don't put as much punch into every single episode, which is what I think you're saying.
Well, here's something. Here's a little secret I will divulge on only on your show, and very few other people know this. I actually put together a treatment for a show.
What?
And pitched it to. It's in front of NBC right now, although it's very... I don't think they're even reading.
One second. What does that mean?
He put together a treatment for a show.
What is a treatment?
Which means he's put all the pieces together to...
Yeah, and I describe. I say, here's the show, here's the concept, here's the episodes, here's what's going to happen.
It's a pitch, essentially.
It's a pitch.
Okay.
So I pitched the show, and it's designed to be a 1 hour show, 1 hour segments, but the story progresses through. You have to watch...
All of it.
And stream it in order to... For the story. It's not... Each episode's not self-contained.
It's chronological.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the way you write now.
It really is, especially on that kind of platform, especially when you're on a bingeable platform where everything is put out all at once. I do think that's interesting. I would be curious to see if Netflix put something out once a week, if people would watch it and come back to it each week.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would really want to know if they just did one.
I don't think, I'm going to be, tag, I'm the old guy here, because we did. I mean, if you wanted to watch Bob Newhart, you wanted to watch Mary Tyler Moore, you had to go home on Saturday night and turn on the TV at 7:38, 8:39 for that lineup. And, obviously, then that was the only time you were going to see it. So, if you want to have something to talk about with your friends next Monday, you had better watch it.
That's what I did for The Office. And I know that was a shorter one, too, but we didn't have DVR, so I'd have to be at home on Thursday night.
You know, the only way that happens now, I know that sports is all live, and you can't put that
It's the only one.
Yeah, but also finales. I think that big show finales are the only other thing where you really see people sitting down, finding time to see it live so that you can talk about it immediately. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones is an interesting example, though, because the HBO stream service actually allows the episode within minutes of when it airs. So I'm streaming it technically a couple minutes behind when it's airing live.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm almost caught up.
Oh, good. Yeah. So it's interesting to see that development, too, because I know that for HBO specifically, and this might answer my question, that streaming thing goes down almost every single premiere episode for Game of Thrones because so many people go to the internet to stream it.
And those are also longer.
It's an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Better Off Ted is a short half an hour, 22.
I don't know. I sound like the most like ADD person ever. Like I can't focus, but I just feel like I wouldn't.
No, you want more.
I wouldn't necessarily come and just sit down for 20 minutes a week anymore. I don't think.
No, I don't think anyone does.
No. I do.
It's rare. It's rare.
Even when I'm watching my shows like on Hulu, I'll watch like maybe two.
Got it.
I'll watch Modern Family and Good Place at the same time.
If there's a new show on TV, you guys wait a few episodes before you'd even watch it?
Well, now they kind of put out, because I know The Good Place, they put out a double episode the first time.
Oh, got it. So there were two for you to binge.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. You can't take 20 minutes of your time. That's a waste. But 40 minutes,
show,
this is way better.
I'm not saying it's a waste. It's
more
just
television.
Like, I don't know.
Not a waste if it's good.
The Good Place show is trying to be what Better Off Ted was.
Is. Exactly correct.
And The Good Place, it pains me to say, is not doing that good of a job. I couldn't even finish the new episode
that's too bad.
Yesterday.
It really
looked from I've just watched the teasers and so on. And
yeah, one of the Gilmore guys writes on it. Like, I really wanted to like it.
They're so aware of their sense of humor. Like I said, that's what really takes away. Yeah, I know, Scott. You got to run. You got
no. I'm good
to do. Tell us, because we left out a lot, which always happens on every podcast that I do.
Okay.
Tell us something that we're missing so far that we have to mention about Better Off Ted.
I think we've raved about it. And if you like crackling, sharp, smart.
Sharp.
Laugh out loud humor, this is your show.
Yeah.
I mean, this is your show. You will be in love with it immediately. Mm-hmm. You will curse the powers that be that put it with the horrible version of Scrubs.
I don't know that was its only problem.
But I think that's
what do you think the other problem was?
Smart television is not watched as much as it should be watched. Like I said, I think when you really commit to sarcasm and you do it so that you don't even acknowledge you're being funny, you lose people that don't.
It's a slightly higher concept than that too. It's a parody of a major corporation.
Correct.
Without it being like an over the top parody. So
over the top though, purposefully so. It is an over
the Octo Chicken was, of course.
Well, exactly. No, it is over the top, but on purpose and in a way that is so believable and so relatable to all the problems that actually it's social commentary for sure. But I think what it does really well that other shows that try to do it and don't do well is that sense of humor is so embedded in all the characters in such a great way that they don't tell us it's funny. And unfortunately, to get back to the original point, people who don't get it just don't watch it. And if you understood that it's... I think if someone turned on the show in the middle of an episode for 4 minutes and saw an exploding pumpkin, they might get confused, turn it off, and not watch it. And that's a shame.
Yeah, it's not Two Broke Girls, which I have to admit, I turned it on and I tried a couple times. That show is bad.
It is bad.
I thought you were about to rave about it.
I may get people hate. You know, I may bring up the hate.
Please.
Big Bang Theory. I think is really it's the traditional.
Big Bang Theory has gotten better, I think.
Yeah.
Not by a lot.
Two and a Half Men is a show that I hate watching, and then when it's on TV, I watch it.
Okay. Because it's a joke of Paige, which is the old formula. It's
right.
It's studio audience. It's all that stuff. And so you're right. When you turn on a Arrested Development, when you turn on a Better Off Ted, it's confusing. I was watching another show that lasted only two seasons, Pushing Up Daisies.
Sure.
Loved Pushing Up Daisies. I think it's so romantic because I'm apparently, you know, a chick.
That's really fun. I love rom-coms. Every week I tell Rachel that I love When Harry Met Sally, so it's just great.
Yeah.
I think that's a really generous thing, only once a week.
Okay.
It's like
twice
once
or
a day.
Three times a week.
It's like once
when Harry
a day
Met Sally
least.
Is the best movie that anyone's ever put out because Billy Crystal is amazing. Billy Crystal is the funniest human that's ever existed, and it's the same exact sense of humor, that very sarcastic.
What about Stalin?
That's what I love. Stalin's a good guy.
Stalin just didn't understand him. People just didn't get him.
Joseph Stalin?
They just didn't get him.
His commitment to humor was amazing.
Oh, full on. I mean,
now we're
genocide of 45 million? I mean, that's going all the way.
That's hate mail territory.
Okay, so.
Right there. So, wait, you said we mentioned everything that you wanted to mention about Better Off Ted?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah, it's just a shame that it got canceled.
One more quick thing. Can I just bring up one more episode? I actually quoted it in an analysis of the past debate. And I just rewatched the episode.
Political.
It's the Linda character. Ted is the computer doesn't recognize him. All of a sudden, he's out of the system.
Oh, yeah.
So she takes over, and so she's talking to the people in the lab. Says, "Listen to my tone, not my words." And that's Trump. Don't listen to his words. Listen to his tone. Mm-hmm. And that's management.
That is very true. Oh man.
Okay. So what would you guys rate this show?
All right, we have to give
and
it a rating.
And also, you have to come up with your own. And the rating, scale of rating.
Yeah,
so
instead of doing like thumbs up or something, you have to do something that would
five something.
To the show. Give us a category.
No, everybody comes up with their own category.
Okay.
5 out of 5 octo chickens.
4.5 out of 5 exploding pumpkins.
I'll do 4.5 out of 5 frozen scientists.
Frozen Phils?
frozen Phils.
That's awesome. Frozen Phils is what we should have rated the show on.
Band name, dibs.
Band name. I want to be the Frozen Phils right now. This is You've Been Challenged. I'm Craig Collins.
I'm Rachel Woodall.
Thank you so much, Scott Stantis, political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and host of a podcast here on WGN Plus.
Yeah. The Prickly City Podcast.
Prickly City Podcast. And you're also appearing on Mincing Rascals, right?
I am occasionally. I'm a guest.
There you go.
I'm
the, yeah. Very, very fancy. Well, come back next week. I have no idea what we're talking about.